Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to another edition of WrestleChat Radio's Raw Report. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York. And for the next hour, we will be discussing last night's Monday Night Raw at 347-215-8486. 347-215-8486. If you'd like to get in on the conversation, of course, as always, you cannot hit us up in the chat room because the chat room is broken. Blog Talk Radio has a very big banner saying, oops, our engineers have been notified, and we will get this fixed. In many cases, it will work the second time.
You're listening to WrestleChat Radio.
And, of course, their sound bites no longer work either. They will pop up whenever they want to, despite when you hit them. Very interesting how Blog Talk Radio gets away with charging premium prices and delivering no service, but this is what you get, folks. We're going to do our best to get through it.
You're listening to WrestleChat Radio.
Anyway, Monday Night Raw. Very, very interesting sort of go-home show, isn't it, for the big Saudi Arabian Super Showdown event Friday. And we start off Monday Night Raw with Roman Reigns in the ring. Now, the situation with the WWE has become very clear that Shane McMahon is their top heel on both brands. It's just the way it is. Now, you could say whether, you know, it's up to you whether he's doing a good job or not. As far as his promos are concerned, and as far as the material he's being given, yeah, he's doing a great job as a heel. The problem is there's no credibility. In other words, nobody, I'm sure, believes for one moment that 50-some-odd-year-old Shane McMahon, who huffs and puffs when he does his dance, is a serious threat to Roman Reigns or The Miz, or any other actual athlete in the WWE. It's an absurd thing. So if Shane McMahon were to be maybe a manager or really limit his in-ring thing to being in a tag team with his guys or just cheating from the outside, we could live with that. But when Shane McMahon is the main in-ring competitor taking on these guys as a top heel, we're not buying it. And that's why it's probably not working as well as it should. Shane McMahon amassing a group of people, whether it be Drew McIntyre, The Revival, whoever it happens to be that Shane McMahon takes under his wing, we could live with the fact that Shane McMahon is the mastermind behind this and is pulling the strings and they're doing the heavy lifting. But it's really not that way, is it? It's Shane McMahon is actually, they're doing the warm-up matches for Shane McMahon's match. They're the guys that people get by to get to Shane McMahon. That's ludicrous. Absolutely ludicrous. So this is what we start with. We're told that, of course, we know Shane McMahon is taking on Roman Reigns on Friday at Super Showdown. Shane comes out, does his normal bad mouthing. To his credit, Roman Reigns has a pretty good promo where he's obviously not taking Shane McMahon seriously, saying, you know, you're not going to tap me out, you're not going to do any such thing. He then reveals that he'll be fighting Drew McIntyre at Stomping Ground, which is the new Backlash. And Drew McIntyre comes out. And then the Revival jump Roman Reigns. We're supposed to have a three-way or a six-man tag team match anyway. The Usos come out and game on. Our opening segment of Raw is now complete, and we now have the six-man tag team match as advertised, with the Usos and Roman Reigns taking on the Revival and Drew McIntyre. Now, this was not a bad match, and it went through, I think, three segments, to be honest with you. I think two, at least two commercial breaks and maybe three. And it's very obvious that the WWE is trying to give the Revival something to do to get him to sign on the dotted line. They've lost a lot of their tag teams, and then they've ruined a lot of their tag teams. They don't really have that much. So they're obviously trying to give the Revival the feeling that we're going to be used in some kind of a tangible way and some kind of a major way if we stay. I wouldn't count on it if I were the Revival. The minute you sign on the dotted lines, you're going to be back to shaving each other's backs. But for what it was a pretty good match. The problem I have with it, of course, is that we are now kind of undermining the Usos, aren't we? The Usos went from the highest caliber tag team you can possibly imagine in the WWE to being the fall guys because you don't want Roman Reigns to take a fall. And I think the Usos has lost 3, 4, 5 straight matches. I don't recall how many, but a lot. Enough so now it is starting to damage them a little bit. And they're going to have to try to rehab the Usos a little if they want the Usos to remain, in the eyes of the fans, one of the top tag teams there, because they're doing an awful lot of counting the ring lights lately. But overall, not a bad match. It sold Drew McIntyre more than anything, but Drew McIntyre being second banana to Shane McMahon doesn't really work well for me. And Shane McMahon simply interfering in every match and being at ringside, that also doesn't work well for me. And I'm hoping we see the end of this Friday, because this is not going to suit the WWE well. If Shane McMahon is your top heel, if that's all you've got in your roster to point to and say, this is the guy, this is our go-to guy to be the top heel, the top guy to get heat, you're in trouble. You got a roster full of wrestlers who wrestle on a regular basis, and you got to turn to Shane to do this? That does not speak well of how you're using your talent. So overall, a pretty good match, Todd, but at the same time, even though Drew McIntyre and the Revival won, I'm not a huge fan of using the Revival or Drew McIntyre to just further a match between Shane McMahon and someone.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, it was a pretty good open match, too, and had the Revival and Drew McIntyre took on the Usos and Roman Reigns there, and it was one of the segments I have seen in a while, too, and like you said, hopefully they don't do the shaving back thing again. I didn't like it the last time when they did that.
Well, I got news for you. Whether they do or they don't, the Revival is not – the Revival are being courted. You know, the Revival are being told, look, this is – you could fit into the mix and be a part of the top, whatever, if you sign. I don't think they're falling for it. I'm not falling for it. But my main problem, I guess, Mike, is that you're using some of your top guys to set guys up for Shane McMahon. And that's weird to me. Why would you use some of your top talent as a setup to a Shane McMahon match rather than, you know, sort of vice versa? I know people will say, well, maybe they will. He'll destroy Shane McMahon and that leads to Drew McIntyre. But it feels as though Shane McMahon is being used as the top heel.
Yeah, it really does. You know, and what is he, 50 years old? I mean, back in the 90s, when they were doing this with Vince was what, in his 40s, maybe?
I don't know. He might have been just as old, but that's really not even here nor there. It's that they didn't do it with Vince this way. Vince, yes, he got in the ring and fought once in a while, but he never really put on what I would call a match where you thought, well, he's going to kick Steve Austin's ass. You know, Shane is coming out literally presenting himself as I am indeed one of the wrestlers. And it's just not true. And he doesn't put on great matches normally, unless they're just these wild matches like he had with The Miz at WrestleMania. If you're just trying to put on a match, Shane usually doesn't put on a very good match. He does a couple of high spots, and if it's not a false count anywhere and he can do crazy things, you know, it falls apart. So the fact that he can talk on the mic, that's not enough. You've got other guys there that can do this, and to see Drew McIntyre kind of second fiddle himself, I don't like it. But the match itself wasn't terribly bad. The promoting thing of the night is Brock Lesnar is being forced to cash in his Money in the Bank briefcase. I don't know why. Apparently because he turned the briefcase into a boombox. Apparently because he made fun of the champions. Apparently because he aggravated Stephanie McMahon. So now they have changed the entire rules of Money in the Bank to you have a year to cash it in to you'll cash it in when we say. Which in and of itself makes no sense. But Paul Heyman has said he will be there and he will cash in his Money in the Bank briefcase. And sure enough, on a segment of Miz TV, which again, Miz is just being used for this now. Seth Rollins comes out. They have a fairly good exchange where Seth Rollins says, look, you know, at least the Miz points out you and I both have been opportunists, Seth. We've cashed in this Money in the Bank briefcase at people's weakest moments. We've both done it. But now Brock Lesnar's got it. And that takes it to a whole new level. Seth Rollins says, well, you know, listen, I knew when I signed up, you know, when I was the champion, everybody's going to come gunning for me, but this is ridiculous. When you got Brock Lesnar with a briefcase, this is ridiculous. I don't know why. Why is it ridiculous? The only thing that's ridiculous is he didn't really win it. He wasn't in the match. But now you're left with this, so you have to have Seth say how ridiculous this is and unfair, despite the fact that it's been this way since the beginning of Money in the Bank. And that he's ready, but he doesn't even think Lesnar's going to show because Lesnar doesn't like to show up and Paul Heyman's never told the truth in his life. But then we go to the Titantron where we see, of course, he's pulling up and he's there. And it appears for a moment like they're going to go into the ring, but they don't. Brock Lesnar decides no, and they go back into the dressing rooms. And the announcers say, okay, Brock Lesnar's here. He's ready to cash in, but he's going to play mind games with Seth Rollins, and we have no idea when he's going to cash it in. Well, the smart thing, of course, for Seth Rollins to do, Seth Rollins didn't have a match that night, an official match that night, is to say, I don't have an official match tonight, so I'm leaving. There's no match. If he's going to cash in, tell him, you know, to challenge me now. Otherwise, I'm out. But no, Seth Rollins hangs around, comes back to the ring later, which, again, makes very little sense. But this is what we're left with. Is Brock Lesnar is lurking in the building, Mike, and he is going to apparently cash in his Money in the Bank briefcase at some point tonight against Seth Rollins.
Yeah, at some point. But, again, this isn't logical. It doesn't make sense. Because it's patently unfair. Because again, he didn't win the match. You know.
Right.
So that's what makes it unfair, and that's what makes it illogical.
Well, the problem is either way you look at it, it sucks. Because if you look at it from Brock Lesnar didn't win the match. Yeah, you're right. He shouldn't be the Money in the Bank briefcase holder at all. If you look at it from the advantage of, he won the match. According to WWE, he won the match. Then why does he have to cash it in now? Why are all the rules changing? He's got a whole year. Last week, he said, I got a whole year. Now, apparently, he does not have a whole year. So, anyway, we're left with that. Next up, Lucha House Party comes out, and we're told they're going to fight a six-man tag team match, but instead, Lars Sullivan's music hits. He comes out, throws them around for a little bit. They finally get their act together and chase him from the ring. And once again, I have to fault the announcers. I know the announcers say what they're told to say. But when you legitimately say on mic, on live television, these three guys, three top level athletes, three of them, they should just run. They have no chance at all, zero chance of stopping Lars Sullivan. Then they should just hang up and not be a wrestler anymore then. If three top quality guys can't stop one guy, I don't care who that one guy is. Now, if you want to promote it that way, that's fine. But the announcers should be saying, I don't care who it is, it's three against one. And these aren't just three guys off the street. These are three highly skilled, highly trained, and extraordinarily gifted athletes. And Lars Sullivan is a big dude, but these are three very skilled athletes. And then if he does manage to destroy them, you're supposed to be shocked and say, I can't believe what I just saw. These are three major athletes that man just destroyed. I wouldn't have thought it was possible. That sells Lars Sullivan more than if you say, oh, well, these three jabronis have no chance. They should just run. Well, then they should just get out of wrestling. Because if the three of them can't beat one guy or even fend them off, and the announcers already know that, then the announcers are technically saying these three guys suck. They're no match for this one man. He's a monster, by the way. 6'3", almost 280. That's not a monster. It's really not a monster. I'm 6'3", 260. A monster is like 6'8", 380 pounds. That's a monster. So they undersold the Lucha Underground to the point where it's embarrassing for the Lucha Underground. Renee Young's job really should have been, and I know she's probably got people in her ear telling her not to say it, but Renee Young's job should have been saying, I don't care. Lars Sullivan's not getting by three people at one time. Not these three guys. These three guys are specialists in what they do. And then if he does manage to at least fight them off, then she should be shocked and say, I don't know who could stop him then. If he can take on those three guys, then I don't know any one person who can stop them. That sells them more. Instead, it's, no, these guys are jabrones. They should just run away. Well, it turns out they fight them off a little bit. And Sullivan is forced to retreat. This is all for the Super Showdown thing where I guess he's going to take on all three of them at once. I don't think this is the best use of Lars Sullivan. I just don't. And I don't know, maybe some of the shine came off Lars Sullivan when those tweets happened and they decided they're not going to push him like they once thought they were going to. But getting into a meaningless, useless, ridiculous feud with three men is kind of silly. It's just kind of silly. And I don't know anyone who's saying, oh, what a match that's going to be. Can't wait to, see that match on Friday. So, Todd, it seems to me like they're just wasting time with Sullivan.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, the Lucha House Party should get beat up by Lars Sullivan in the script. But it looks like this is like he's getting – looks like Lars Sullivan's getting punished for – making those racist comments and all that other stuff on social media. It looks like he's getting punished for this.
Yeah, that's a good point. They might be saying, look, because you did this, you're going to have to show some ass to these guys and make it look like they're... But here's the deal anyway. Regardless of that, my point, Mike, is that the announcers should sell the Lucha Underground better, and the Lucha House Party better, and say, I don't care what one guy comes down. These are three great athletes. You're not going to fight all three of these athletes off. I don't care who you are. And then when he does, it makes it seem like they're surprised too. And it sells them better than if they say, oh, well, of course he beat them guys. Those guys are nobody. And that's kind of what it feels like they're saying.
Yeah, it kind of does feel like what they're saying. And frankly, look, Dorado, wasn't he into the Cruiserweight tournament, and didn't he advance pretty far in that tournament at one point?
Sure did, absolutely.
And so that, them saying he's nothing, is illogical because of what he did in that tournament.
Kalisto was a champion. Kalisto was a champion in WWE. Yeah, it is. It's ridiculous. That's my point. I mean, the announcers think they're selling Lars Sullivan by saying, oh, these guys should just run away. They have no chance. You are not selling Lars Sullivan that way. You're selling Lars Sullivan better if you convince the audience, this guy's not beating three people. He may be a big, monstrous guy, but these are three quality athletes. And then when he does, you're supposed to be shocked and say, I don't know what to say. I never would have thought it was possible. This man just defeated three people. One of which was in the high end of a tournament for a belt, and the other which have held belts. And that's an enormous feat. And if he can do that, then I don't know of any one man that could stop him. That makes more sense. But in the wacky world of WWE, it's the announcers have to say, oh, they have no chance. Run, run. Because, of course, that's why you signed up to be a wrestler, so you can run away. So three of you can run away from one man. That's why you signed up. That's absurd. Absolutely absurd. So I didn't like that segment at all, obviously. And then we get, of course, to a segment backstage with the Iconics and Nikki Cross. And the deal about Nikki Cross is this. I never would have believed it was possible that Nikki Cross could play a sympathetic, sort of a loner, underdog, friendless, pathetic sort of character. But she does it very well, which means that she's multifaceted when it comes to what you can do with her. And my suggestion to the WWE is you don't waste this. Do not waste this. As she's being berated by the Iconics, surprisingly, Alexa Bliss comes along and kind of sticks up for her. And then Alexa Bliss says, look, I know you and Becky are friends, and me and Becky, we don't get along. We've never gotten along. So, you know, I get it. I don't have a great track record with friends. Nikki Cross says, well, listen, you've been nice to me since I've been here. I consider us friends. It doesn't matter who likes who. And she decides she's going to go out into her corner to face the, one of the Iconics anyway. Now, this could be an interesting storyline because there's many ways you could go with this. You could obviously go with the patented – Renee Young kind of gives it away and says, oh, I don't think she'd be a good friend. What's her track record with friends? Which makes me think that this is not going to be that, because if it was, I don't think Renee Young would give it away. I don't think Renee Young would say, well, she's just pretending to be her friend. What kind of track record does she have with friends? She always turns on every single one of her friends. That probably indicates she's not doing it this time. And because she's very limited to what she can do in the ring right now, it's probably in her best interest that she doesn't. But you could potentially have a very interesting character with Nikki Cross. And that character would be something we kind of alluded to, you might be able to do with Bayley, but Nikki Cross is actually better with it. And that is to make Nikki Cross kind of a passive, non-aggressive, almost sympathetic character until she gets riled. And then she becomes a nut. Then she becomes the old Nikki Cross, where she beats everybody up and bites you and throws you underneath the ring apron and all that crapola. And you say, God, she has sort of a split personality there, where you piss her off to a point and it's like, you know, it's like the Incredible Hulk. You know, you piss the guy off enough and all of a sudden, whoop, here we go. That could work for Nikki Cross. And she's proven, Mike, that she has the chops to do it as far as on the mic, which really surprised me. So if the WWE is looking for another really good character and a pretty good in-ring competitor to throw into this women's division mix near the top, I think they found her.
I think they found her as well. Look, this kind of feels like early Daniel Bryan, where Daniel Bryan was this nice guy, this underdog, and then you would see him snap at times, you know, and go after people. You know, that's what this feels like with Nikki Cross. And look, they're having her, they're having Alexa Bliss act like a face right now.
Definitely.
So So
yeah, definitely.
I mean, it appeared like they're trying to flip Alexa Bliss.
You know, they very well might, because right now we don't know what her ring capability is, or if she's going to get back in the ring anytime soon, and so they may, for a temporarily at least, flip her. Now, of course, she didn't really interfere or do anything in the match until her coffee got spilled, which is a little bit of a heel thing, but at the same time, you're right. It does appear like she's genuinely has a friendship with Nikki Cross. Now, my only knock on this is, man, since the Iconics have become tag team champions, they have looked like they can't beat anyone. Anyone. Not individually, not collectively. And that's too bad, because it harkens me back to what Sasha Banks was saying, where if you're going to make the women's tag team belts mean something, then you got to put them around people who are going to be winners, and you just didn't. So the women's tag team belts at this point, it's fairly useless. Let's face it. We then get the Becky Lynch promo, where she comes out and basically says, maybe I've grown a little complacent. I've been really comfortable with my life and everything's going well. And then I realize this is not what you want. If you're a champion or your competitor, you want an edge. So Lacey Evans, thank you for giving me that edge. Lacey Evans comes out right in her face, which is kind of cool. You know, they're not making Lacey Evans look like a coward exactly. She comes right out and starts jawjacking with Becky Lynch. At that point, Charlotte Flair comes out. All three get into a little bit of a kerfuffle, and then before you know it, Lacey Evans gives Charlotte Flair the woman's right, which Charlotte Flair so undersells. She sells it like she got slapped. You know, remember when Becky Lynch just like went out like a light? Charlotte Flair definitely didn't sell it that way. And we have an impromptu match. And let's be honest, there were parts in this match that felt very uncomfortable. There are parts in this match where it looked like someone got lost. It's not your usual Charlotte Flair match, and I have to blame Lacey Evans, because my thought is Charlotte Flair has been around too long to be the blame of getting lost in the middle of a match. At the end, Becky Lynch interferes, kind of takes out what she said she was going to do. Basically, she said, the first time I get an opportunity, I'm getting revenge on Lacey Evans. She did. Of course, it made Lacey Evans win by disqualification, which just keeps the tension between Charlotte Flair and Becky Lynch going a little bit. So, I mean, I'm not against that, Todd, but it wasn't a very good match. I don't think it speaks well of Lacey Evans and her ability to put on great matches at this point.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, the match wasn't great. It was a lot of missed spots. It was sloppy. It's not Charlotte Flair's fault in that of that match. It was more.
It probably isn't. I mean, I don't know whose fault it is. It probably isn't. I'm going to give her the benefit of the doubt over Lacey Evans. Rey Mysterio comes out to relinquish his belt. I don't know why you just give it directly back to the champion. I thought the referee's decision was final. If the referee's decision is final, then you relinquish the belt. There is no champion. And you must hold a tournament or whatever you're going to do. But no, in this particular case, you can just give it back to Joe. Now, had they said, this has nothing to do with Rey's injury. We reviewed the tape, and the shoulders were clearly up. It was clearly the referee's fault. I still would have some reservations, because I thought the referee's decision is final. But at least I could see why you might decide to give it back to Joe. But if you're saying, no, he's just injured. Finn Balor didn't give the belt back to anybody when he got injured. Why do you just give it back to the last champion? That doesn't make any sense. But they wanted to further the heat between Joe and Ray, and they did, I guess, because rather than Joe be happy he's getting the belt back, he attacks Ray even with his shoulder injury and puts him in the coquina clutch. And I guess in the long run, that's fine. But if Ray's going to be out for months. I'm not really sure how that's going to play 5 months from now, 4 months from now. Still, it wasn't a bad segment, Mike. It's just that I don't know what it leads to, really.
Yeah, I don't know what it leads to either. And the fact of the matter is if they let's just say that it doesn't lead to anything. First off, the using of replay doesn't matter because shouldn't matter because it's wrestling, you know. But if you want to go that way, okay, fine. But the thing with Joe, if this is it for the Ray thing until Ray gets back, they better put Joe on a winning streak to make that title worth something.
I agree with you 100%. I mean, if that's where they're going with this, is they want to ultimately build to Ray and Joe again, then Joe better not be put in six-man tag team matches where he's the loser. Better not be put in non-title matches where he's the loser. You better put Joe on a winning streak where when Ray comes back, he's basically undefeated since Ray left. I mean, that's almost the way it's going to have to be if you want anything out of this at all. Anything. I don't think they're going to do that, though. I really don't. I think they're going to move Joe on to some other feud, and we may not even see Ray and Joe again for a while. Who knows? Who knows where they're going with that? We then get Braun Strowman and Bobby Lashley in an arm wrestling contest. Because I don't know why. Because they're going to be fighting in Super Showdown. Now, this did throw me back to the days of the old WWE where they would do the weightlifting challenges or the arm wrestling or the tug of war. So it wasn't that I hated the concept. It was that some of the execution was a little weird. And if you're a wrestling fan for more than 5 minutes, as soon as Bobby Lashley lost his grip and went over to the powder, you said that powder's ending up in Braun Strowman's eyes at some point. Now, what did surprise me, I thought they would simply not have a winner. I thought they'd have him attack him and then dump the powder in his eyes. No, they clearly let Braun Strowman win, which surprised me a little bit. And then Bobby Lashley, being upset about that, throws the powder in Braun Strowman's eyes, beats him down, walks off, and I guess it's an okay build-up for their match. It's better than nothing, because that's kind of what it was up to this point. It was nothing. So at this point, I guess it's better than nothing, but again, it was a pretty predictable thing, and it didn't come off. I'm not sure the fans really dug this, you know. Again, Braun Strowman's character's been modified a lot from a guy who just wanted to come out and wreak havoc. And really wasn't anybody you wanted to try to reason with in any way, shape, or form. And that's what they portrayed him as at first. A guy that you literally said, look, when he comes, there's no point in sitting here trying to talk to him or reason with him. You either got to fight him or run. To a guy who's willing to participate in the arm wrestling contests. Seems a little bit of a stretch, Mike.
It seems a little bit of a stretch, but again, this is a guy who has legitimate strongman things. He was in the Arnold Classic and, you know, different strongman, amateur strongman contest. So him being in this type of a thing fits that character, what that character was. And we know what Lashley looks like. He looks like a guy that could be an arm wrestling guy, you know. That's how he's built.
Well, see, that's the point. That's the point. I mean, look, yeah, does it fit Braun Strowman's real-life persona? Yes. Does it fit the persona they gave him for so long as this psychotic monster? No, it doesn't. So they've obviously changed the Braun Strowman persona to an extent. I still think there's very little hype for this match. I really don't know anybody who's, like, super psyched for this match. Not one person. So I don't think the arm wrestling contest in and of itself did anything special to help promote that. So let's get to the Bray Wyatt Funhouse segment, because this was really interesting, wasn't it? Now, I am not a fan of keeping this going forever unless you get Bray Wyatt in the ring. You can't keep doing this. But this was a really good one, because It mixed real life with this fantasy thing. Bray Wyatt comes out and says, I got a very serious subject to talk to you guys about tonight. And he seemed like it was going to be a very dark segment. And all of a sudden he says, exercise. And we're introduced to Huskus the Pig, which of course is a play on Husky Harris, his original character. And the pig is eating chocolate and saying, I want more chocolate, I want more chocolate. And he says, no, 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 you don't want more chocolate. One of these days, people are going to say you got the whole world in your hands. And he's alluding very strongly to his old character. Then in the door comes a Vince McMahon puppet with devil horns, who says, if you don't get in better shape, you're fired. Now, this is all alluding to the fact that when Husky Harris first got into the Federation as a member of Nexus, a lot of people were very high on him, but Vince McMahon wasn't, because Vince McMahon said he didn't like the fact that his body shape. So they're mirroring real life with this fantasy thing. And then, weirdly, Bray Wyatt does this almost music video about doing the strongman dance or whatever the hell it is. But I don't know if you noticed, but every so often a pentagram would flash up. Now, as far as I know, that the WWE of old would have said that's a no-no. Someone's going to notice that pentagram and someone's going to say, yeah, no, I don't think that's a good idea. Well, they either counted on you weren't going to see it, or they've changed their philosophy, because it was there twice. And then at one point, Bray Wyatt says something about, erase your mind in a very different voice. It was a very unusual segment. And it added extra interest to where this character is going. So this was actually one of the better segments. But I still say that if they do not introduce Bray Wyatt in ring immediately, like next week, this could run its course and get old quick, Mike.
Yeah, it could get old quick, but like you said, it was a fun segment. I mean, it had a lot of stuff to it. Just it reminded me kind of the first segment we saw of this stuff, where you said, okay, it looks stupid, but on second glance, it had so much things in it that you had to take a second glance at it to find out what was there. That's what this was. You know, a lot of people
definitely
probably missed that pentagram. You know,
yeah.
You know, a lot of people,
I guarantee a lot of
probably
people
missed it.
I guarantee a lot of people did.
You know, and it's like, and probably had to go back on a second glance. And if they play it again tonight, you know, then you'll have people probably on some of these other sites, on some of these chat rooms, talking about, well, they showed a pentagram and how did it get past the censors and all this type of stuff, you know? So
I'll be very interested to see if they try to cut it out in any way, shape, or form. Not that it's such a horrible, terrible thing that has never been shown on TV before, but the WWE has always made an effort not to have any sort of occultish symbolism that's real, or even religious symbolism recently of any religion. And it's just a little weird that all of a sudden that rule kind of got broken. I, in my opinion, they shot all these Firefly Funhouses probably ahead of time, far ahead of time. And maybe Vince didn't get to really see them all, you know, or okay every single second of every one. And that might have shot by him. So I'm interested if they replay it tonight, if they cut that out, or they tell them that's not going to air, that part of it's not going to air. We'll see. But it was an interesting segment. It showed Bray Wyatt has a lot of versatility in what he can do. There's really not any limitations to what you can do with Bray Wyatt. His limitations aren't outside the ring. His limitations are inside. So let's see what happens when he actually has matches. Let's see how it's going to play out, how the character's going to be, how he's going to look, how he's going to dress, how he's going to fit in the different things, the Fiend and the Bray Wyatt we see hosting the Funhouse and the different things. Let's see how that's all going to play out. But it was an interesting segment. So let's see. Next we get Randy Orton and Triple H, and they come out and basically just trade insults. This could have went worse. I didn't like it, but it could have went worse. It could have went worse because Triple H could have insisted there's still animosity there, and he didn't. He basically said, look, this was such a long time ago. So much water under the bridge. And at the end of the day, everything I said actually was true. I said you were a diamond in the rough, and you ended up being that diamond. And you might not have even got there if I didn't do what I did. But at the same time, you know, you call yourself a legend killer, but you're not the guy. They can polish me off. And Randy Orton says, look, you haven't had your balls for a long time. Get them out of Stephanie's purse before you come fight me. They both looked like they were just sort of having a good time, laughing and joking about it. They didn't take it too terribly seriously. So whatever. Again, I don't think there's a lot of hype for this match. But at the end of the day, Mike, they could have done a worse job of this, promoting this, I suppose.
They could have done a worse job. And I did like the line. You know, I was expecting a line somewhat like that to be said by Randy Orton. I mean, I was expecting something like, well, when he said, well, you, a lot of people have come and gone, and I'm still here. Yeah, you're still here because you married the owner's daughter or something like that, you know?
Right. I guess that's kind of what he meant when he was talking about getting his balls out of Stephanie's purse. But anyway, look, it was an okay segment. We then get to Cesaro and Ricochet in the rubber match of their series. Each one has one victory. This match had some flubs, unlike the other two, but it also had some really, really good spots. So obviously these two guys work well together. Obviously the WWE knows that, and they're just sending them out there because they know, look, the more you guys fight, the better off it is for the fans who like this style of wrestling, and just go out there and do it. Now, the fact they let Ricochet win the rubber match of this series means, I guess, that they have future plans for him. And Cesaro is kind of, back into the middle of the pack. I like the match. Here's what I didn't like. When Cesaro sneak attacks Ricochet after the match, and I think, okay, this could lead to maybe a ladder match, maybe a no DQ match, maybe some kind of special match. Cesaro starts going under the ring. He almost pulls out a ladder, and I'm like, here we go. This is what we're going to get, some kind of special match out of this at a pay-per-view. Then he's no. He goes to pull out a table, and R-Truth is on it because he's hiding from the rest of the pack, who instantly see this, and they come running for R-Truth. And now you've made a joke out of the rest of this. And I just don't like this 24/7 thing. I just don't like it. If you say I like it because it's comedy relief, fine. That's what it is. It's comedy relief. But I'm not necessarily sure I want comedy relief right in the middle of a sneak attack of two of your top athletes. So I thought it was a little misplaced and a little bit weird, but the match itself was actually pretty good. But let's get to the main crux of this, because Seth Rollins hits the ring and basically says, look, I'm tired of this nonsense. Brock, have you got any balls left? Come on out here and cash the damn briefcase in, and it'll be what it is. And out comes Baron Corbin, who says, you really don't need to worry about Brock Lesnar. You need to worry about me. I'm the guy who's going to take the belt from you Friday, which nobody believes in, you know, their wildest imagination. That leads to an impromptu sort of a brawl / match. And Brock Lesnar does indeed come out. Or at least his music hits. It distracts Seth Rollins, who ends up getting the End of Days. And then Brock Lesnar does actually come out. And I'm sure almost every fan in attendance is saying, well, this is it. This is the big cash in. And I did too for a moment, but then it became very obvious to me that the more he beat up Seth Rollins, he's not cashing in. That if he does cash in, it's not going to be successful. So I'm thinking to myself, is someone coming out to help Seth Rollins, or maybe something's going to happen? Something's going to happen. But nothing happened. Brock Lesnar literally was turned into a moron last night because he literally F5'd Seth Rollins on the floor. He gave him German suplex after German suplex. He demolished him with a chair until he was legit bleeding from his back. And says, I'm not cashing it in. I'm going to wait till Friday. Now, we all know the reason, because Super Showdown has to be bigger than WrestleMania, remember? That's what they're feeding you. Equal to or superior than WrestleMania. But this just makes Brock Lesnar look like a total idiot. Why in the name of God would you wait till Friday to cash in when you have a man who obviously is that injured he could not possibly fight you off? You're guaranteed to be the champion, and you say, yeah, I'll wait till Friday. Think I'll just wait. Okay. Well, this makes me think it's going to be unsuccessful. I know a lot of people say, oh, no, he'll do it Friday. I don't know. I think it's going to be unsuccessful. If he does. Because it really doesn't make any sense. Or, because of the beating, maybe Baron Corbin wins. He cashes in on Corbin. I don't know. But I don't think he's going to cash in on Rollins. I just don't. And this wait till Friday thing makes me think it's Kofi Kingston he's going to cash in on. See, he never said he was going to cash in on Rollins. So he could say, no, I didn't want to cash in on Rollins. I just wanted to beat the hell out of Rollins, which I did. The reason I didn't cash in Monday is I didn't want to cash in on Kofi. I didn't want to cash in on Rollins. I wanted to cash in on Kofi, and he wasn't there. That would be the only thing to me, Todd, that would make any sense. Because otherwise, why the hell would you not cash in when you have Rollins in that condition?
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, it's telling you something. He's not cashing in on Rollins at all. It looks like he's going to probably cash in on Kofi Kingston this Friday afternoon at that Showdown, whatever you call it. And it looks like it's going to be more like Kofi Kingston. He's going to cash it in.
I really do think that's possible, Mike, because otherwise what happened Monday night makes no sense.
But then again, is he going to be – he may cash it in, but is he going to be successful? Do they really want to take this thing off of Kofi Kingston right now?
I don't know. I don't know. I would – my gut says no, don't do it. But my head says the WWE did not bring back Brock Lesnar to be unsuccessful cashing in Money in the Bank. They did not let him win Money in the Bank to say, oh, he blew it. So unfortunately, I think he's gonna. Because if he doesn't, then you're telling me we brought Brock Lesnar back, let him win Money in the Bank under ridiculous circumstances. Teased for weeks and weeks and weeks about him cashing in, and then he blows it and goes back to doing what? That doesn't sound right. So unfortunately, I think probably if he cashes in, whoever he cashes in on, it'll probably be successful. And back we go to the era of Brock Lesnar being a champion, which at least he's showing up a little bit more, but it wouldn't be my choice, put it that way. We then get to the last segment, really, which is The Undertaker, which, look, for people who know me outside of this radio show, there is no bigger Undertaker fan than me. Was my favorite character, if not my favorite wrestler, was my favorite character forever. Forever. It's time to end this nonsense. His heart's not in it at all. He got in the ring. He's trying to stumble through a promo that's not even very good anyway. And nobody, Bill Goldberg, come on, man. It's 15 years past anything that anybody would want to see. 15 years past it. And it kind of undermines them both. And it's sad. It's sad to see, like, we got to close the show with The Undertaker because we don't have a star as big as him. Well, why not? You're in the business of making stars. Make one. You got to bring back almost 60-year-old men? And then you wonder why people like AEW are stealing some of your thunder? Because they're using guys who can still get it done. They're not relying upon, you know, signing people or getting people to come out of retirement at 60. They're just not. So as much as I love The Undertaker, let's just hope that no one embarrasses himself and no one gets hurt. That's all I can say. As far as Raw this week, some of it was okay. The matches themselves weren't bad for the most part. Some of the storylines got furthered to an extent. Most of them for the Saudi Arabia show, let's face it. It's become a really big deal. See, the WWE, I guess what makes it so egregious to me is the WWE could say, yes, we signed a deal with Saudi Arabia. Yes, we're going to have all these matches, but we're not going to waste American time promoting this and promoting this and promoting this. If you guys want to watch it, it's on the network. You know who's wrestling. We'll mention it a few times. But, you know, it's not one of our big, big events for the non-Saudi crowd. But that's not what they're doing. They're halting everything else and saying, this is bigger than anything we're doing. This surpasses anything that we're currently working on. We'll stop storylines if we have to, because this is bigger than WrestleMania. And that's what offends me. Because you'd think they would just say, look, it's a pretty shady situation dealing with the Saudis anyway, so let's not rub everybody's nose in it and say how it's the most important thing we do. Let's just do it and let it fly under the radar a little if it can, and it'll be what it is. No, not at all. They're wearing it like a badge of honor. We're going to make you have to see this. We're putting everything into this. All of our eggs are in this basket. Bigger than WrestleMania. Wow. You're really doubling down on we have no problems working with the Saudis government. And that does bother me a little bit. Obviously, we're going to be watching the show. We will be here. I believe it's, 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock on a Friday Eastern Standard Time anyway. We will be here at noon, and we will run you through some of the SmackDown. And we will also prepare you for this Super Showdown. So that will be our programming schedule for Friday. But talking about this Raw, it had its highlights. It had its moments that I liked. Had a very good funhouse that really makes me think there are at least some people thinking. It had some tantalizing ideas with what are we going to see with Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross. Aside from that, I think it was a little devoid of energy. So I'm going to give it a C-. Mike, what's your thoughts on it?
C-minus as well. And frankly, I just want to touch one little thing about the Iconics. They could have had something special with the Iconics, because their characters are these annoying people, you know? And those are the type of people that if they're holding a championship, you want to see get punched in the mouth and get beat, you know? And if they played it right, they could have had something special with those two girls and the women's tag team championships.
I agree with you. They let them get beat far too often, so now it's not special. If these girls were just these annoying girls who somehow managed to win all the time against all odds by cheating, by doing whatever they had to do, by hook or by crook, you're right. You could have built this up to be something special where people said, I cannot wait until somebody shuts those two girls up. But they're shut up every week. Every week they're proven to be jabrones and not as good as they say they are. And so nobody cares anymore. That's the problem. When you're building up wrestling characters to be someone the fans want to see get beat, it would be the equivalent of saying, well, Lars Sullivan got beat by the Lucha House Party. What do you expect? It's 3-on-1. He got beat. But that's okay. He's only going to fight single guys now. And you're like, well, now the thrill's gone. Now we don't, we've already seen him get beat. So what's the big deal? You're right. The Iconics should have been, the minute they won those tag team belts, they should have went on a tear of whether they're lucky, whether they're cheaters, whether whatever happens, they don't lose very much. If at all. And then it would be special when they lost. You can't have heels lose constantly because then it's not special when they lose. Fans don't feel that exhilaration of finally. They're just like, oh, again? It's like Baron Corbin. Nobody cares if Baron Corbin gets pinned. He's pinned all the time. So it would just be like, oh, okay, he got pinned again. WWE does far too much of that. Far, far too much of that. And that's why they don't have any really successful heels. And I'm afraid that we're staring down the barrel of watching Drew McIntyre lose one more time. And Drew McIntyre cannot really afford to take loss after loss after loss after loss either. And still try to say, I'm the top heel. I'm one of the top heels, because people are going to stop caring about those losses. So you're right. They could have something special. They have something special with a lot of people that they tend to just undermine for some reason. Todd, what's your rating this week?
I got to go with you guys. I got a C minus.
So it's C minus all the way around. And before we close the show, I do want to say one thing. You know, this show we did on the AEW on Sunday was very controversial. I got a lot of mail back and forth that we have no idea what we're talking about or that we're 100% right. It's a powder keg. But let me just say this. In a time where, and maybe they're right, a lot of WWE wrestlers are saying, we hate the WWE, we hate being here, Vince McMahon's out of touch, he's ruining the show, his booking is horrible, repeating verbatim what Jon Moxley said in his interview with Chris Jericho on Talk is Jericho. I was happy to see Velveteen Dream, after his match at NXT, tweet, AEW, follow that. They made him delete it. They made him delete it, but for the life of me, I don't know why they made him delete it. Because there's absolutely nothing wrong with being proud of your performance and being proud of the company you work for. The company you work for may not be perfect, and you may not really enjoy working there all that much, but you should be proud of your performances. And I would much rather see guys promoted who said, look, I'm proud of my organization and I'm going to give it a shot, the best shot I can, than guys who say, I have mentally checked out. I'm just waiting for my contract to expire, but I've mentally checked out. If you've mentally checked out, you are no longer giving the fans their money's worth. So is there any reason to use you? No, the answer is no, of course not. So I was happy to see that, Mike, you know, at least one or two of the NXT or WWE athletes are taking some pride in what they do and saying, look, we're not going to be second banana to you guys.
Well, yeah, I was glad to see that too. And look, we've said this about many of those pay-per-views, is that they have been consistently between the WWE pay-per-views and the NXT pay-per-views, the better pay-per-view. And this one would have been no different if there would have been a WWE pay-per-view on Sunday, you know, because it was an excellent, excellent pay-per-view. And I really did enjoy that match between Velveteen Dream. And now we know how good Tyler Breeze can be, and he showed it again.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it just furthers my point that there are an awful lot of athletes in the WWE who are underrated, who fans have said, oh, they're not as good as so-and-so. And actually they are. And if they're allowed to use it, they can be. Our only hope can be that the WWE opens up the door and lets these guys utilize a little more of their skill. That's all we can really hope for as fans. So we'll see what ends up happening here. I'm happy that there's going to be a competitive feel. It didn't feel competitive before. It felt like everyone was saying, yes, AEW's right. We hate the WWE. We can't wait to leave. Now at least a few people have come out and said, hey, don't write us off yet. We're as good as you are, and I like that because that means there's going to be some competitive fire. We will see you on Friday with the SmackDown and Super Showdown report.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio.
Wrestling Chat Radio is a Savage Blade production.